Thank you very much. So first of all, I'd like to thank organizers for giving me this opportunity. So I'd like to focus on the mass ejection from binary neutron star. So the purpose is to broadly model the mass ejection mechanism for GW1718. Okay, so let me summarize the parameters which I used in this talk. First, charge mass of the system is this value. So this means that within 90% level, so mass is between 2.73 to 2.78 solar mass, assuming that the spin of each neutron star is reasonably slow. And in the same constraint, so mass ratio is this value. So this means that this system is not likely to be the highly asymmetric, so nearly equal mass system. And the viewing angle is 30 degrees. And as you had many talks yesterday, so this is a light curve, so optical infrared electromagnetic counterpart of this event. Roughly speaking, there are two components. One is a very bright and early optical component, and the other is a red component. So I'm going to interpret this optical infrared electromagnetic counterpart using the kilonova, macronova scenario. So anyway, so this light curve is, broadly speaking, this light curve fit well with the kilonova or macronova models. And this is the peak luminosity and the peak time in the kilonova and macronova scenario originally proposed by Lipachinsky. And anyway, so this has three important parameters. One is ejector mass and velocity and opacity, as you know well, and also heating rate. But I don't touch on the heating rate in detail here. But anyway, we have three important parameters. But velocity doesn't change so much depending on the scenario. So even for dynamical scenario and the wind scenario, velocity is, roughly speaking, order of 0.1 speed of light. On the other hand, mass and opacity change significantly depending on the scenario. And in particular, opacity changes by two order of magnitude, as you know. And this opacity is primarily determined by the lanthanoid fraction. And so lanthanoid synthesis efficiency is determined by electron fraction. So this means that the electron fraction is very important for this problem. And also mass change by a factor of 10. So then so mass is also very important parameter. So in the following, I like to talk about the mass and the YE, so electron fraction of the ejector. Okay, so I like to skip all these figures because I used many figures yesterday. And then so this is one important figure. So this is the mass fraction of the lanthanoid as a function of the original YE, so electron fraction. So this is very steep. This shows that if electron fraction is less than 0.25, so we have a large fraction of the lanthanoid. But on the other hand, if YE is larger than, say, 0.27 or something like that, we have almost lanthanoid-free ejector. So this means that if YE is smaller than 0.25, so opacity is likely to be of order 10 in this unit. And if YE is larger than, say, 0.3, so then we have almost lanthanoid-free ejector, and then so kappa should be very small, so typically 0.01. Otherwise, so but in the very narrow range, we could have a kappa of order unity. So this is a very important information for the following talk by myself. Okay, so let me start talking about the numerical relativity results. So this is a schematic picture for the possible outcome of the binary neutron star merger. Anyway, after the merger, we have a variety of possibilities. So if our mass is high enough, so black hole is formed. And if our mass asymmetry exists, then so black hole could be surrounded by disk. And if total mass is not very large, so smaller than some critical value, then so massive neutron star. Massive means that the hypermassive or supermassive neutron star is formed. But usually, such a massive neutron star is highly elongated. And also, are highly elongated as a result. So hydrodynamical torques works well, and Zenso angular momentum transport work as Zenso such a star could collapse to a black hole surrounded by disk like this. Or if a total mass is very large, Zenso massive neutron star doesn't collapse to in a dynamical timescale or such a hydrodynamic timescale, and Zenso cool down and eventually leading to this summer very massive neutron star. So these are possibilities for major binary neutron star. But so what is the most important, I think what is the most important result in our numerical relativity simulation is that if we employ the appropriate EOS, appropriate means that which reproduces the two solar mass neutron star, then so this massive neutron star formation is a right likely outcome. If total mass of a system is smaller than about 2.8 solar mass, this is, I think, a very important result for a binary neutron star merger simulation. And as I said in the introduction, total mass of the this event is this value. So this is smaller than 2.8. So this means that for this system, it is reasonable to consider that at least temporarily massive neutron star is formed. And maybe so massive neutron star could be a very long lived. So in the following, so I suppose that remnant after the merger is a long lived massive neutron star. So for this case, this is a possible mass ejection history in the presence of the long-lived massive neutron star formation. So as David said that soon after the merger, in a few milliseconds, dynamical mass ejection occurred. But following dynamical mass ejection, because of the presence of the massive neutron star at the center, there are subsequent mass ejection mechanisms by the MHD or viscous effect. One is a mass ejection mechanism associated with the viscous hydrodynamics of the remnant massive neutron star. And the other is a viscous mass ejection associated with the differential rotation of a torus surrounding the massive neutron star. So anyway, so there are three steps for mass ejection. And the other important, very important ingredient is that neutrino irradiation, because presence of massive neutron star means that the presence of very strong neutrino emitter. So neutrino emission does not play a mass ejection itself, but neutrino irradiation play a very important role for determining the electron fraction by the weak interaction process. So this is one of the key for explaining the this latest binary neutron star event. Okay, so let me talk about the three ejection mechanisms. First, dynamical mass ejection. So as already talked by David, this occurred soon after the merger. Anyway, so after the merger, mass is ejected like this. So we have three processes. One is a tidal torque, and also at the merger, so shock heating play important. So then, so by the tidal torque, matter is ejected along the equatorial plane. But on the other hand, by the shock heating, so matter is ejected almost isotropically. And also, because the presence of the massive neutron star at the center, so we have a strong neutron heating. So typically, our luminosity is larger than 10 to 53 elux per second. So it also plays an important role for changing the electron fraction. And, we performed, and many people performed a similar simulation, and the conclusion is that the total mass is between about 0.1% to 0.2%. This value depends on the equation of state and each mass. Of course, if mass ratio is very small, then some mass ejection is enhanced. This is so, but anyway, this value depends on this parameter. But what is universal is that the electron fraction profile has this wide distribution profile. This is a fraction of mass as a function of the electron fraction. As you see, so we here show the three results with the three different equation of state. And you see that there are many, so wide variety of components. And as I already said, if y is smaller than 0.25, then so lanthanoid would be synthesized. This means that universally, so dynamical ejector is likely to be lanthanoid rich. So this means that opacity of a dynamical ejector would be very high, so typically 10 in this unit. Mass could be a wide range, but velocity is in a narrow range. But anyway, kappa is very large. So this means that the time scale, the peak time scale of the dynamic, peak time scale of the electromagnetic counterpart is a little bit red with this value. So this means that, and also so due to the high opacity, high peak luminosity is very low. So this means that by dynamical ejector, we can only explain the very red time and dim part of the this event. So, but this event shows that typical luminosity at one day is about 10 to 42 electrons per second. But by this dynamical ejector model, so it's not possible to reproduce such early shining. But maybe so dynamical ejector could explain the red time, red component, because the dynamical ejector is will shine for at red time, and the luminosity is relatively low. So anyway, so for interpreting this part, so we need another component for the ejector. So then, so we need to consider the mass ejection from the merger element, not the dynamical ejector. So as I already said that after the merger, typically with a small mass, small total mass, remnant is a magnetized massive neutron star surrounded by torus, and both are differential rotating. And also initially, neutron star should have a strong magnetic field. Then so merger, remnant also should have a strong magnetic field. So this means that the magnetic turbulence is likely to be enhanced. So this means that the fluid is effectively in a viscous hydrodynamic state. So motivated by this idea, so several people have performed a viscous hydrodynamic simulation. And indeed, since about 5 years ago, Fernandez Metzger and MPA team performed a viscous hydrodynamic simulation for a torus surrounding a black hole. And then so they showed that such a viscous effect play a very important role for mass ejection. I think that Daniel will talk about this one so later. And in addition, not only the torus, but also the remnant massive neutron star should have a magnetic field and the differential rotation. Then so also magnetic field, viscous effect in massive remnant neutron star could play an important role. So I focus on this talk. And also, one very important thing is that the remnant neutron star is a very strong emitter of neutrinos. So then so such a neutrino redirection play a very important role to change the electron fraction of the ejector. Okay, so anyway, so I would like to show you a viscous or latest viscous hydrodynamic simulation by ourselves. So in this simulation, so we employ a covariant and causal GR viscous hydrodynamics, originally proposed by Israel Stern many years ago. And for this simulation, we use, as an initial condition, we use a remnant of a merger simulation, which I showed in the earlier view graph. In this simulation, we use a fairly so stiff equation set in which radius is about 13 kilometers. But in this case, a long-lived massive neutron star is formed as a remnant. But the simulation is performed not in 3D, in axisymmetry, because we like to evolve this system for more than seconds. So, but by 3D simulation, such a long-term simulation is very expensive. It's impossible. So we restrict our attention only to the axisymmetric case. And so also because viscous hydrodynamics used, we have to give a viscous parameter here, but for this, we use a well-known alpha parameter prescription, some written like this, and we use a typical alpha parameter, this value. So this is imported from the accretion disk simulation for the around central object. Anyway, so with this choice, viscous time scale of a massive neutron star become about 10 milliseconds. And the viscous time scale of disk is about several hundred milliseconds. So this means that with these two different time scale system evolves. Okay, so let me show you an animation. First, so I would like to show you a very short time scale evolution, because the time scale for the viscous time scale of massive neutron star is very short. Okay, so let me show you an animation. No. Okay. I would like to start. So I would like to start from the beginning. So. Initially, so in 10 milliseconds, so mass is ejected. So it's not very easy to see. Right. Something like this in 10 milliseconds. This is due to the differential rotation neutron star relaxed to the rigidly rotating state. This is the evolution of the angular velocity. Initially, after the merger of binary neutron star, we have a steeply differentially rotating profile like this. But in the presence of the viscosity, this differential rotating state relaxed to the rigidly rotating state like this. Then some energy is released. In this case, kinetic energy of about 10 to 52 eV is released, so this is very huge. As a result, so as a result of this change of the angular momentum profile, density profile is changed, and also pressure profile is changed. Then density wave is generated, and then such a density wave becomes a shock wave. Then eventually, mass is ejected. This is one possibility for mass ejection, and. Also, for long-term evolution, this differential rotation plays a role for viscous ejection from the disk. Okay, let me show you. Anyway, so in the first, so we have a mass ejection, but after that, we have a long-term evolution of disk. So disk gradually expands due to the viscous Hilbert dynamics. I think that Daniel talked about the detail of this mechanism later, but anyway, so. By the viscous angular momentum transport, mass is ejected from the system. And in this case, total eject mass is comparable to the initial disk mass. And in this case, about 0.05 solar mass is ejected. But velocity is not very large because mass ejection occurs far from the center. And what is important is that the typical electron fraction is very large, this value. Okay. So this is due to the fact that we have a still massive neutron star here. Then so neutrino irradiation plays an important role for increasing the mass electron fraction. This is a histogram for the ejector. So this this is a mass ejector mass as a function of the electron fraction. And you see that most of the ejector component is larger than 0.25. So this means that only small fraction of lanthanoid is synthesized. The mechanism is something like this. Anyway, so we have a very strong emission source in this problem. So proton and neutrons are irradiated by the such a neutrinos, and then so fraction proton and neutron approach the equilibrium value. And the equilibrium value is roughly speaking 0.5. So then so if neutron star has a very neutron-rich component, but by the weak interaction. We have a high YE component, like this. But anyway, so YE is very large. Then so this means that the kappa should be small. And then so by this component, so typical luminosity and peak time become like this. And this shows that the typical luminosity is fairly high and peak time is very early. So as a result, broadly speaking, ejector, electromagnetic signal from this ejector is consistent with the GLAB-17817. So anyway, so by dynamical ejector, we can only explain the red time component, but by viscous winds, so it's possible to it would be possible to explain the, this early time. But of course, so it's not very easy to explain this, because for this, we need a very fast component. So by numerical relativity simulation, we cannot have such a very high component at present. Okay, so let me summarize. Anyway, so numerical relativity is, I believe that people now understand that the numerical relativity is very variable to, in astronomy to produce such an electromagnetic counterpart. And our simulation discovered that there are three possible ejector components for this event. So dynamical ejector and the early time viscous ejector and the late time viscous ejector from torus. And this late time viscous component will be very important for reproducing the, this event. And so what is the key for interpreting the, this event is Newtonian irradiation. So this means that we need at least a fairly long-lived neutron star at the center. Okay, so thank you very much.
Questions?
So I was just surprised for point one, you have a diversity of YEs, but then you assume a large opacity. Are you, is that because you think the material is very mixed, or would you expect different components to radiate differently?
Oh, so for dynamical ejector?
For the dynamical ejector, yeah, you have a wide diversity of YEs. So why do you just choose one opacity?
Oh, yes, yes, this one.
Yeah, so is the implication that the stuff is very well mixed, or why would you only choose one opacity?
Ah, you're right. So anyway, so this dynamical ejector is composed of, roughly speaking, so tidal component mm-hmm. and shock heated component. And in the component to the equatorial plane, Y is very low. So, but for polar component, Y is very high. So typically larger than 0.3. So roughly speaking, this is a equatorial component. And this is a polar component.
Okay. Yeah. And then one more quick question. The blue components that you work on seem to have low velocities. And yeah. I think a really important constraint is the high velocities that seem to be seen at early times. Yeah. How tough of a constraint is that for you? Is there ways to get higher velocities than what you have? Or is this 0.05? See kind of a hard limit?
Yeah, so as I said, so in our calculation, it's very difficult to reproduce the high velocity. So for the case of a wind component, velocity is always very small, very low. So I think that so this is the conclusion. And, for dynamical ejector, we could have a very high velocity, but for a viscous ejector, velocity is typically 0.1 or 0.05 or something like that. So it's not easy to reproduce a high velocity blue component in our simulation. I think that some other gradient is necessary. So for some engine or something like that.
Kind of a follow-up question on the short-term viscous ejecta. In this particular process where you start essentially a simulation which you took a remnant essentially from a binary neutron star merger simulation.
Yeah.
And you turn on viscosity all of a sudden. It's of course completely natural that if you take such a remnant that has not been generated self-consistently through some viscous hydrodynamic or MHD processes to arrive at the final angular velocity profile, it makes sense that if you turn on all of a sudden viscosity, you will get a shock and you will heat up the remnant essentially, and you know, you'll get this ejection of matter. So I'm just curious whether you think that something like that would persist, or whether they would even be present at all if you had an actual self-consistent simulation where you form the remnant with all the viscous hydrodynamic terms or the MHD process, so that you arrive in essentially smoothly configuration that you start with.
Yeah, I agree, but it's not very easy to do. So
I know it's not, but I'm just worried that this might be an artifact of the initial conditions.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So, then we go to you.
So the YE for your disk ejecta seems to be a little bit higher than Rodrigo or Daniel's YEs. And unfortunately, that difference matters a lot. So I wonder.
So presence of the Newton irradiation. So in the Daniel's simulation, so he considered the black hole in the center. So in this case, we have a massive neutron star, so which is a strong emitter of neutrinos.
That lives, just to be clear, lives for the entire kind of many hundreds of milliseconds.
Pardon?
Lives for many hundreds of milliseconds in your calculation.
So, Masaru, one of the possible electromagnetic components that have been discussed in the literature, but not seen here probably because of the long delay, is emission from just free neutrons decaying. Is there any hope in the simulations to be able to resolve that component, given that it probably has a very small mass? And
yeah, so this morning, so I prepared one figure. Anyway, so this is a distribution of the eject mass as a function of velocity. So this is a very, in a sense, idealized simulation. So I use a very simple equation of state. But anyway, so in this simulation, we see that the very fast component up to 0.85 or something like that. But in this simulation, I don't take into account the component and the temperature and so on. But in the future, this shows that if we take into account the details of microphysics and the component and the temperature, so on, maybe so we could see such a high velocity component. So it's a to do. Yeah. But anyway, so very high component should be possible in this problem.
So I have a question about your viscous treatment. As you know, the Israel-Stewart formulation addresses a mathematical problem, but also messes up potentially the physics. It's not doing it in a significant way in a disk configuration, but in a volume filling, it can really affect the physics one it's getting. So how confident are you that maybe some part of the physics you're getting is not influenced by something that the Israel-Stewart formulation is forcing the system to do?
Well, so as you said, that this is 2D.
No, so you're using in the volume filling problem. So you don't have your distribution is not a disk.
Yeah.
It's in the hypermassive neutron star and everything that is around.
Yeah.
So my worry is that if you go and change the parameters of the Israel-Stewart formulation, do you get exactly the same behavior or very consistent behavior?
Oh yes. So we checked. So we performed a simulation with a three different value of alpha, and at least qualitatively the same result is obtained. But of course, time scale change due to the change of the viscous problem. Yeah. But qualitatively it's the same.
Okay. We're gonna thank Masaru again. And we have a coffee break till 11, and then we'll resume it. Thank you.